I'm Robert Castanello, Assistant Professor of History at the University of Central Florida, and you're listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. RICH is the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, RICHES seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, we have a preview of the upcoming podcast. We hope it will pique your interest and make you return to check out this exciting podcast series.
When it opened, it was one of only two in the country where you could go and stay that had rooms attached to it. That was pretty much a novelty. They advertised the hell out of it in the gay publications of the day. With so few options for people to go to, almost immediately the Parliament House had people, you know, people were coming from England and from France and Germany and other countries.
I think Moore was so very far ahead of his time. This is an amazing thing, I think, that he was 10, 20, 30 years ahead of the rest of the country. He was saying things beginning in the 1930s that Martin Luther King would be saying 20 years later and drawing national attention. He was challenging the system in an era where no one else was challenging the system. The court cases that led to Brown versus Board of Education, the ruling in 1954, mostly are post-war cases. Here you had Harry T. Moore in the 1930s making court challenges, something that no one else was doing, and certainly not an African-American in the South.
I lived about a block from the main line for the Ferries and Gulf Railroad in Oakland. And my dad took me out to wave to the train. He loved trains. Mm-hmm. And he took me out to wave to the train each day, even before I could walk. So I've loved trains ever since.
I guess you could say there are multiple paths to this job. But one of the biggest things is to get into something that's going to give you some design experience as well as the museum experience.
Or just driving down Orange Blossom Trail, it worked to get people's attention. But it also was so kitschy and eye-grabbing that people wanted to take their picture in front of it.
Kerouac was one of the great so-called beat writers of the 1950s and 60s. His influence kind of came at a time in post-World War II America where people were looking to break out of the normal confines of the nuclear family.
They welcomed, beginning in the 1920s, a more modernist style. And I think that's what we see in the Cocoa Post Office design. Something that evokes the dignity of its public purpose and the security of the function that's being carried out in the building, in this case, you know, the mail, right? But that really emphasizes function over ornate adornment. You don't see a lot of adornment. There are some nice touches, you know, the eagle, the replica stars that are cast into the facade, but nothing really very grandiose.
I think people are fascinated in knowing the stories that people have to tell. One thing that Ben Wheeler said, said to somebody, he didn't say it to me, we didn't know we had a history till Attucks came here. And I was greatly flattered by that. I felt that to give people a certain pride in their community, and it's been gratifying to me because...
The story that Orlando was named for a Seminole War soldier named Orlando Reeves just will not go away. The city has continued to sort of enshrine it. I think there is a marker at this side of Lake Eola, at the east side, that was put up in the late 30s with money donated by school children or middle school children in the memory of Orlando Reeves. But there's also another marker at the other end of Lake Eola where this put up by the city, I think, that tells, at least mentions Orlando Reeves as the source of the name Orlando.
15 miles from where Lyndon Johnson, then president, was pressing a button to break ground onto the new Cross Florida Barge Canal, they blew up a train, and you could actually hear the explosion. And people in Washington said that this was the first and only time that a president ever threatened J. Edgar Hoover. Johnson got back to Washington, he called Hoover in, and he said, I don't care what pictures you have of who, and I don't care what you have on anybody. He said, you either get these guys or you're out of a job. And four men were arrested and charged with conspiracy to blow up a Florida East Coast freight train.
Each month in 1995, alumni presented programs highlighting several careers such as law enforcement, politics, arts and literature, medicine, and military, and so forth. But I think one of the most dramatic changes was the integration of Jones High School in the early 70s.
My family and I moved to Orlando in September 1949 when I was a small child. I do remember it real well. And we moved from Pennsylvania. My mom and I rode on the train. But one of the things that I like to tell people about it then was I really dislike sometimes people sort of portray Orlando at that time as a sort of bumpkin little town where nothing happened. Whereas in fact, it was small, but the downtown area was a very active retail center.
Central City, USA, what's known as Winter Park. Be careful driving through that town, especially after dark. You'll find yourself in the middle of a pit all covered up with dirt. That sinkhole swallowed Winter Park and it didn't even burn. Well, there's loads of houses in that hole. The swimming pool is gone. What's left of Denning Drive most likely won't be there for long. People are excited, they come from miles around to see those six new Porsches lying buried in the ground.
And listen to the program without being segregated. You know, you sit up, black sit over here, white sit over there. We didn't have that. You sit where you can find a seat in the auditorium. And so Ms. Bethune have a lot of dignitaries coming in and everything. My senior year playing against Florida A&M. I got lucky and caught the touchdown pass to beat them 8-7. And so I got drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then I went to Pittsburgh, stayed 6 years. So then I came to Bethune-Cookman to work because over the athletic program. That's how I got started into the program as an employee. I came in as the head football coach, athletic director, and head basketball. So they put my shoes on me. And got me squared away with that. And that helped me a great deal with the head coach because my coach brought me in.
All right, well, right now I work for the Institute for Simulation and Training here at UCF. And I do virtual heritage, which is essentially I take topics from any time period, but I specifically work from the 19. 19- post-World War II topics, mm-hmm. and we recreate items that are no longer there. So, like the launch complexes at Cape Canaveral, we virtually recreate them. And my current endeavor is the 64-65 New York World's Fair.
So it's really an interesting look at history, and also the unintended negative impact of those civil rights laws of the 1960s. Again, as wonderful and as necessary as they were, they really did have this unintended negative impact when some of the community leaders moved out.
After African Americans were disenfranchised, political possibilities just kind of collapsed, and so communities really turned inward and just tried to sustain and survive as best as they could.
African American history is kind of a misnomer. African American history is everybody's history. It's a part of American history that we should all be aware of.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Legacy of the Ocoee Race Riot of 1920, that explores the long-term impact of this event on Central Florida.